Hi, friends. This is the beginning of program number 38, and it's our introductory section to Dyna One, that is section one, volume one, section one, and we have a little bit to go before we reach the end of part nine. In this video commentary, I think I may go on into part nine. Usually I stop when a new part comes up, but there's so little left at the moment that it may be well to simply go ahead. Now, in the segue, DK has talked about something really important, and he asks us to ponder on it. He's basically saying here that it's love of humanity, which is the basic lack in the character of many disciples today. Looks like I then he tells us who these disciples do love, but it's not humanity as a whole. They love those with whom they may be associated, or they love the work connected with the group endeavor, or they love their own nation. They may also love an ideal or theoretical assumption, but they do not really love. Let's see if I can get this down here. They do not really love humanity as a whole. And that is something we really have to ponder and find out whether we ourselves love humanity as a whole. Not doing too well here. There are limits, he says, to their capacity to love. And it is the transcending of those limits which constitutes their main problem at this time. They have to learn, he says, that I would ask you all to ponder deeply on the above statements, for they embody the task ahead for you also, as you seek to fit yourselves for the first or second initiation. Now, may I say, these are initiations of the threshold, and here we're being asked to love humanity as a whole, even in these preliminary stages. So the task here, DK says, it is humanity which calls for their allegiance, their loyalty and service. Now, maybe that's going to come as a surprise to us, but maybe we should sit down with ourselves and see to what extent we really love humanity as a whole, and not just those isolated members and isolated activities which he gave to us as the usual objects of our love. Let's pause for just a moment and think about whom we love and why. I think for many, this would be a radical change, a radical enlargement and deepening, if they could transcend these limitations to their ability to love. So he really asks us to ponder on this. That humanity itself calls for the allegiance of the disciple. Of disciples in general, their loyalty and their service is a huge task. Sometimes DK asks us to just try to fathom what the Lord Maitreya, the Christ, may think of the task before him during the next little more than 2,000 years. And in a way, how horrifying that task must at times seem, to bring warring humanity, selfish humanity, to the point where they really begin to care for each other in the ways of love. Now there's just a little more here before we go into part 9. He says, I would remind you also that the life of the disciple is ever a life of risks and of dangers, entered into willingly and deliberately in the cause of spiritual unfoldment and the service of humanity. This is another way of asking us whether we have counted the cost of the path of discipleship upon which we have apparently willingly entered. So just pause for a minute and see if you can decipher some of the risks and dangers that have come your way because of this path that you are treading. And if, may I say, if we're talking about dangers, we know how many great disciples have sacrificed themselves, their body, their personality, in pursuit of what they simply knew they had to do. The Christ for us, foremost among these. I suppose we could include Master Kutumi when his academy at Crotona was attacked. It's hard to know what to say about the Tibetan because the history is a little uncertain. There are simply, well, I think also Master R, in one of his earlier incarnations, and certainly Saint Paul is among them. He knew that by going to Rome, that would be the end of his incarnation. Peter, he asked to be crucified upside down because he was not, in his view, worthy to be crucified as the initiate Jesus was crucified. John the Baptist, who was caught by the Hebrew king Herod and subjected to the unclean will of Salome. Many knew of the dangers. I'm recalling something about Rudolf Steiner and knowing that assassins were lying in wait for him. I think if he went to a certain train station, but because he knew these things by psychic means, he was not able to use them on his own behalf. And so he went anyway. It turned out, though, that that particular plot was thwarted. And then the risks and dangers from inner attack. As DK tells us that these counterforces are warring militantly against the disciple and helping to create circumstances of considerable danger to the perpetuation of the incarnation. Now, not all necessarily have to die in this way. Maybe more in the West than in the East. Maybe a different way of going through the great renunciation is found in the East than is found in the more dramatic way of the West. So, coming back to the idea, we must all, and we're hardly fit to do it, we must all count the cost as we begin to, in earnest, tread this way of discipleship. Oh yes, and of course, I shouldn't leave out Father Damien. With his sun in Capricorn, and I think Taurus rising, he knew his life would end with leprosy. But so strong was his commitment to do something for these lepers on Molokai Island that he dismissed the risk and continued until his fate was fulfilled. That's why the Tibetan has said that the death of a Father Damien or of a Jesus is entirely different than the death of a Hitler, for instance. One, the first pair, is given or gives a life to humanity. And the sort of arch villain of the 20th century, there's debate about it. Did he really commit suicide? Did he find a way to transport himself to South America? What was the story there? But if it was a suicide, it was the inability to face the humiliation and probable death sentence that awaited him. So, anyway, we count the cost, and we must not be surprised when that cost is exacted from us. DK goes on here to say, but I would ask each of you to watch your emotional life and reactions with greatly increased care. I would ask you, he says, to watch particularly for the least outcropping of glamour. May I say, though, however difficult it is to detect such outcroppings, based particularly on three fundamentals, suspicion, self-pity, and also criticism. And he goes on, I would call your attention to the fact that the emergence of emotional conditions or of glamour in your life expression need not necessarily indicate failure. What I suppose, as we place foot upon the burning ground, we have to expect the uprising of that which will and must be burnt. I would call your attention, he says, it need not necessarily indicate failure. There is only failure if there is identification with these astral conditions and the succumbing to old rhythms. That's what we really have to watch out for, the recrudescence of that which should have been outlived. Somewhere we're told that evil is the good that should have been outlived. Well, some of us are fearful, and we hold on to the old conditions, which are often very astrally based, and I would say based largely upon fear. I would say that the Abrahamic religions, those that are still extant, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, have caused at times much retardation in the development of humanity, and their time has come. In their present form, not necessarily their mystical form, they are not useful for real advancement of the human being, the human group, the human nation, and the whole of humanity. So we are to watch out for the least outcropping of glamour. And I suppose if we become a true trained observer, developing the skills from seed group number 2, we will be sharp enough to locate, detect the outcropping of such glamours. But at first, we may be quite surprised, as I know or feel certain that the Tibetans group members were surprised when he pointed out their glamorous barriers to true understanding and to the truth in general. So don't we see how much vigilance is required as we examine the progress or retardation of the little self while not being identified with that little self? There is a condition often of bewilderment, and it takes training to overcome such a condition. So difficult situations will come up. What do we do with them? That's the main issue. Do we succumb? Or do we overcome? To succumb or overcome, these are the two major choices. And I would say that during the Aquarian Age, there will be a large-scale overcoming of these normally retardant conditions. One can only imagine how much soul work will have to be invested in this overcoming. D.K. goes on to say, the success of the meditation work assigned and regularly followed may be proved to you by the appearance of these undesirable conditions. In other words, sometimes when something from the dregs of the aura arises into consciousness, it means that they have been evoked by successful meditation work and are no longer allowed to hide, to lurk, to poison the whole system, which undetected they could well do. So at first, let's not say to ourselves, oh goodness, these things are coming up and it indicates my failure. We have to be wiser than that. We will meet many obstacles along the way, and quite a number of them will arise from within ourselves based on our own aeonial experience over millions of years. So the attitude of the disciple is to handle the difficulty as it arises. So maybe some degree of success is indicated to you via the rising up of really undesirable or seemingly undesirable traits. I was thinking about Pluto and how important it is before the reappearance of the Christ becomes possible. And when Pluto is in the first house, it can give dramatic insights into one's personality nature, and those insights are sometimes pretty horrific. Well, because they come up, is that a failure, or shall we not find a way to heal and purify? Adike goes on here to say, these undesirable conditions, they must be then recognized for what they are, and evoke in you that divine indifference which permits the emotion or the glamour to die of attrition, because deprived of the feeding power of the attention. Well, easier said than done, of course. Easier said than done. Because when you are in the midst of compulsive thoughts, thoughts which are part of your aura, or which are forced upon you internally by certain demonic presences, if you warrant their attention, they're very hard to bear. But a way through them and beyond them, and a way including divine indifference, must be worked out. This divine indifference, I think, belongs to the dispersive technique of indifference, which helps rid the disciple of Maya in the technical sense. DK goes on, the whole history of true emotional control, whoa, is found in the sentence just given. Now, that's a very strong hint, and redoubles our will to really study this material. There will be the appearance of undesirable conditions. They must then be then recognized for what they are, and here's the important thing, and evoke in you doing my best here. Yes. Recognize for what they are and evoke in you that divine indifference, which is dismissive of conditions which might otherwise stop you in your tracks. You're moving forward no matter what, and you will not let the appearance of undesirable conditions stop you. So divine indifference will be evoked. Let's pause for a moment and practice that. The attention will lose its feeding power if we succeed here. And the whole history of true emotional control, not just suppression, which will come up later again, unconquered. So the whole history of true emotional control is to be found in the sentence just given. Let's pause for a moment and see where we might benefit by this attitude of divine indifference. Well, it is to be tried, right? It is to be tried as one is assailed by the past, by the accumulations, by the deliberate thwarting of one's progress, by inner beings who, as DK has said, war militantly against the progress of the aspirant. This divine indifference will cause emotional distress. I mean, it will cause relief from the emotional distress which otherwise would be present. Now DK goes on and says the progress of achieving this control constitutes one of the most difficult periods in the life of the disciple, and quite one of the longest from the angle of time. And for this, you must be prepared. Well, we can see how much about treading the path DK knows. He is experienced. He's sharing the experience with us. And hopefully we are wise enough to take him at his word and try what has worked for him. Now, is it a matter of several lives, this process of achieving emotional control? I think that whole period that we can call Chela in the light has to be given to a great extent to this achieving of emotional control. Yeah. Particularly, is it difficult, he says, at this time to triumph over emotion because of the intense emotional condition of the entire human family, and the widespread fear and terror. Fear and terror for which the Black Lodge of Adepts is responsible. I think we can understand how fear and terror will prevent a disciple from taking those steps which otherwise could be, should be taken. Humanity has not yet taken the second, well, let's say, our planet, our planetary logos, has not yet taken the second initiation. Yes, it's also true for humanity, which has not taken even the first initiation. So humanity and the planetary logos are still moving forward on the initiations of the threshold. At the same time, the planetary logos is involved with a minor fourth initiation, which adds to the fear and terror which the Black Lodge is promoting. The Black Lodge wants to stop human progress at all costs. Perhaps they know they are doomed, at least in this solar system, but they want to take many down with them. By the time we reach the Judgment Day, the second cosmic initiation will have been taken, and, well, it's kind of a fifth minor initiation on the planet. And we're told that when that number 5 appears, it is possible that the planet or the planetary chain or the planetary globe begins to enter a state of sacredness. So we have only to look at the news and the bloodshed and the murder and the hatred to understand something about this very exacerbated condition within the emotional body of humanity. And if we can achieve some degree of mental focus and even mental polarization ourselves, we can lead others to that. Okay. So the Black Lodge is, as it did in Atlantean times, making matters worse. And their attention will be very much augmented as we approach the 2025 Great Conclave and the continuation of the teaching of the Ageless Wisdom through such masters as the Tibetan. So here we are, speaking of them, and many people who start down the left-hand path never really reach the Black Lodge. They don't go that far. Something turns them around as they journey towards what's called the land of distances, and they can redeem themselves. As far as the Lodge of Black Adepts is concerned, the redemption is probably not going to be found on this planet or in this solar system. They will have to start over again in a new solar system. So their efforts, of their efforts, DK says, this definitely complicates your problem and that of all disciples. It tends to foster a most potent glamour. So I beg of you, and there he goes again, in earnest, he asks us, and he uses this word of supplication that we call begging. So I beg of you to proceed with courage, joy, understanding, extreme caution, and at the same time with speed. When I look at a list like that, it seems that the demands upon us are intense, but we are not being demanded to do anything that has not been done or that we cannot do. Yes, our problem is complicated, and a glamour's do arise and stop our way. But right off the bat, so to speak, courage he wants from us. Yes, he has said, I wish you were younger and more courageous. Well, probably we can't do much about being younger in the body, but about courage we can do something, and joy, as for joy, Master Moria tells us that it is a joy to do the Master's work. Master DK also has given us detailed understanding. Of what we must do, and taught us what understanding really is and how to achieve it. And then this requirement that the superficial reader will never properly grasp, extreme caution. The white magician is ever alert to danger. The master with his foresight is ever alert to that which might complicate his problem and the problem of those for whom he has taken considerable responsibility. And he's always saying, isn't he, read more carefully what I've written. That's part of the extreme caution. He's not writing for the superficial. He's writing to be attended to, point for point, and with meticulous entirety. So I do believe we can understand how much care in reading and applying is required of us. And we do have to set up some kind of program of study and application. And certainly service that will allow the fullest possible absorption of the amazing material which has been presented in such an organized way. We could stop this work right now and go right back to the beginning and absorb what is voluminously unabsorbed. And if anybody doubts that, let them try. I know long ago I read this book. Now I wonder, can I really say that I read the book? Really? Or was my approach too superficial to have what this book imparted become a true part of my life? Certainly I have to go with the latter judgment. Now, there's just a little more. And maybe, you know, I'll just keep this as a shorter program. And then working on the last 13 pages, which would be part 9. I'm just so aware that the secret teaching that is imparted to the students in the great universities of Tibet, or now perhaps northern India, these are being imparted to us. so that the progress we make can be true and sound and lasting, not just for our own edification, but for the fact that, or because, this impartation will actually make us usable. By those who are working at the externalization of the hierarchy. So the last paragraph here before section 9, I would point out also, he says, that the intention of all true disciples is to stand by their group brothers in love and understanding. Well, think about that. And how we stand by our group brothers in love and understanding. Or whether we do not. We really do need to strengthen each other. And we can. Every member of the human family is here. And they exist, they are real. And somehow, deep down, we have a connection with every one of them. Now, many of these people do things that we consider to be abhorrent. It's a reflection of where they stand on the path. Now, does where we stand on the path, does that prevent the Master DK or KH or the Christ or Sanat Kumara from loving us? It does not. As a matter of fact, probably to them, so many of us look more encumbered than the average non-aspiring, personally oriented individual looks to us. Love is something different than approval of the behavior of some individual. That approval based on like and dislike, or that condemnation based upon people doing things differently than we might do them, all of that has to go. That's part of the glamour of sentiment as it is described in the Rays and the Initiations, rule number 11 in the introduction. Now, not all people will be as close to us as others. Even the Christ had his beloved disciple, as it were. But love one another, he said, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. And as simple as that seems, that is a great task for us to apply ourselves to and to cultivate that love. So simple as it seems to be the major task of so many disciples, to love humanity and to love one another. And one will feel it in a different way than the usual approval. So often followed by disapproval. You know, I like what you're doing, kind of thing. You're doing something just the way I would do it, you know. All of that is not the same thing as the love. So anyway, our intention, and it should be the intention of all true disciples, is to stand by their group brothers in love and understanding. I'll just say that he does single out the idea of group brothers. So supposedly then a relationship of a closer nature is going to exist with group brothers. But that does not mean that we do not love humanity as a whole and the individuals which comprise humanity. So we really have to work at that, I would say, to overcome this major deficiency within disciples at this time. So it's about this standing by, D.K. says, upon this fact, you can count. Basically, this is a statement of love, is what he's offering here. Upon this fact, you can count. I would also assure you that the protective love of your master, and that is who he is for so many of us, the protective love of your master is around you, and that I shall not fail you at any time. Now, something here looks like an ellipsis. What else did he say? Why is it not here? Okay. But it's enough what he just did say. Think about that and your relationship with Master DK. At least in this context, your relationship with that particular master. I would also assure you, that the protective love of your master is around you. Now let's pause and ask ourselves, do we feel that? Do we sense that? Do we register that? And how bold it is for him to be able to say, and that I shall not fail you at any time. Well, we're certainly not there yet. We may have sent our protective love to some for whom we have close and strong responsibility, but surely we will fail them somehow. It will happen. But then this punchline to everything, after all of this is analyzed in the last analysis, the battle is yours. And he will say in other places, see that you battle. I guess when we realize there is no way to avoid the battle, between what did Lincoln call it, our better angels and our normal elemental nature, we resign ourselves to that fact. If we don't fight, being a member of this fourth kingdom and with such crucial issues in the balance, humanity will not go forward as it should. But we, of course, have to choose our battles. You know, PKN's certain sections with unforgettable statements. For me, one of those statements was very simple: work, my brothers. And here's another one was, see that you battle. And here's another one: the battle is yours, no matter what the master does. In his surrounding us with unfailing love, he cannot fight the battle for us. He would deprive us of the strength which comes with the victory which can be ours. The battle is yours. Centuries will go by, and books like this will come into increasing favor among those who can truly think and see greater possibilities. And humanity will be slowly transformed, its attitude transformed into something which so few have at the moment. And during the next centuries, it will be our task to help to oversee this transformation of attitude and to change materialistic values into true spiritual values, first by demonstrating them, shall we say, in our own life, and then by showing the way to others who can learn to demonstrate, even as we are being shown the way. Okay, friends, well, basically what I did is just I took a lot of time on a very short section, but at least next time that we work, we will be beginning with part 9. And I would say that because Master Moria has said that with gratitude we have the best fires, we must extend our gratitude to Master DK and to those behind him who have given him permission to bring forward certain aspects of the ageless wisdom, and along the way have added to the amount that he can bring forward. This is interesting. Some of my abbreviations are getting in the way here. But anyway, we have the end here of program number 38. And today is the 30th of August. And we'll be beginning with program number 39. Maybe by the time we reach approximately program 50, we will be done with section 1 of this great book. And we've done section 3, and I don't regret that we have gotten into the 6 stages of discipleship. So, basically, this should say XX, because we're not sure when it will begin, but probably August, September. Of the year 2021. Okay, friends, that's it for the moment, and then another 12, 13 pages to go, probably of a great importance. Here's a whole section on visualization that is coming up. Well, we'll see. We'll be patient and let this come up. Reading it now is like reading it for the first time. No matter how much we have said we read it, never get stuck on the repetition of that old limiting phrase. Oh yes, I read that. Because you're always going to find new things. So Tuya and I wish you lots of love and many blessings, and Biel and Joe and Michael Stacy and Mikhail Crow and others that have helped us so much along the way, especially as conference time approaches. We wish you the very best and the fullest possible absorption and application of these wise words from the Tibetan. And we'll see you before long. Bye-bye for now.